Hey everybody, welcome back to the Engineering Entrepreneur Podcast. This is episode 149, so that's kind of a lot, close to that 150 milestone. Show Scott Tarsi. My business is caddesignhelp.com, where we help inventors and entrepreneurs with their products. And please go to my website, caddesignhelp.com, and sign up on the email list. And when you do, we'll send you a free PDF of the top four mistakes inventors make. You can send me an email for any feedback, info at caddesignhelp.com. So our guest this week is John Appel, and he's a biologist by education and a process and mechanical engineer by training, and is a second-generation inventor of a revolutionary waste-to-energy process that can convert all carbon waste simultaneously in a wet and mixed stream into clean burning. Carbon-neutral fuels, biochar, which I don't know what that is. I'm sure you can answer that. Organic fertilizers with no waste streams or byproducts in an environmentally positive way. John, so thanks for coming on. Don't have a lot of knowledge of this sector, but let's just hear more about you. Like where you're from, what was your education in, your kind of background and whatnot, and then we can go more into what you're doing now.
Sure. Scott, thanks for having me. Excited to be on the show. I'm originally born and raised about 7 miles from John F. Kennedy Airport, so just outside of New York City. Lived there most of my life. Went to school, a small school called SUNY Plattsburgh in upstate New York. Studied biology and minored in chemistry there. So got my degree in science, but knew right away that I was going to be working for my father and the family business. My father's an inventor as well. He invented the original version of what we do, a less advanced form. But essentially, I've been doing that most of my life. There were a couple of different things that I did in between. I got involved with a stem cell technology for a while and had some significant experience in the biomedical field. And I didn't really like what I saw, so I got out of that. And I'm also the founding partner of a regenerative agriculture company called Food Forest Abundance. Where I've helped install food forests and help people become self-reliant. But love what you do. I mean, CAD is one of those programs that has really been helpful for me. I'm self-taught on CAD, so I wish 10 years ago when I was learning how to do CAD off of YouTube videos, I came across your website because I probably would have taken a class or two. But it's been an interesting journey. I grew up in science. I had an obsession with animals as a kid. There was a story I tell from time to time, and if anybody ever asked me who my inspiration was growing up, I usually say Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter. I wanted nothing more than to be a zoologist and travel the world with Steve Irwin as his sidekick, just exploring animals and seeing all the different creatures of the world. And when he passed away, it was the only time I ever cried when somebody I didn't know died. I was inconsolable for about a week. But went to school, got my degree in biology, and started working for my family right away. Our family business had an unfortunate hurdle that we had to overcome. My father's company went to go public in 2008, and the IPO released the day before the market crash. So we had a major economic issue within our organization. We ended up several years later taking our technology to Turkey, where I lived in Istanbul for 5 years. That's where I met my wife and one of the co-founders here at Eden Energy. She's a marketing expert, so we're blessed to have somebody with that skill set in the family. We developed the technology even further there to the point where we can take all carbon-based waste, as you mentioned, simultaneously in a wet mixed stream, which means you can take plastics with poop, with food waste, with oils and greases, and tires and all those different things and process them all at the same time through the system. Unfortunately, on July 15th, 2016, there was a failed coup d'etat in the country, and it caused a lot more economic hardship. So we've had some major successes with the technology over the years, only to have socioeconomic problems give us major setbacks. In 2002, I was at one of my company's off-grid facilities in Orlando, Florida, and I was telling people about the technology and what we can do. And people started saying, "Oh, I got to get it going again." And I looked it up, and the technology that I've helped create that we are utilizing now is actually classified as a completely new technology. So I was able to start completely fresh without having to worry about anything from the past coming up. So I started putting a team together and We've assembled a team of about 25 people who are working within our organization now to bring these technologies to the world. We've been in contact with a couple of world governments, some from Africa, some from Asia, about bringing our technology there. And what we do is we have taken this system, and instead of building 1,500 ton per day biorefineries, we've scaled it down into portable, scalable, and modular equipment. So now we build containerized versions ranging from 1 ton to 250 ton per day skids, and that can suit the need of any waste producer. So let's just use a slaughterhouse, for example. A slaughterhouse is producing probably between 50 and 20 tons a day of waste, depending on the size, and they're paying a large fee to have that material hauled off site. They can now install one of our systems, process all their waste through the system, including their sludges, their sewage sludges, their greases, all the blood, the guts, the bones, the feathers, all the stuff that comes off the animals. And then they would actually be able to get rid of their disposal costs and generate their own clean regenerative electricity on site to offset their electricity costs. And this, these, there's no waste or byproducts from the system. It's a complete recycling system based off of the reverse engineering of Mother Nature. So it's just copying Mother Nature and improving on her process.
All right, that's a lot to unpack there. I guess let's slow down, and I guess tell me how your dad's first version worked.
Sure.
So basically, this is just used at like, which by the way is pretty gross. I don't really ever want to see pictures of it, but the whole slaughterhouse thing, I can imagine. There's
Yeah. Not
animal
fun.
poop. Yeah, animal poop, animal pee, animal, like just all the parts of an animal just being ground up into a nasty mixture, basically. And this is being recycled, essentially.
Yep. And even with plastic, I mean, that was just one example because we had built a commercial refinery with Butterball Turkey in the past. But essentially what it does is it uses a series of pressure vessels and reactors to subject materials to various pressures and temperatures in the presence of water. And we use water as a catalyst under those pressures to convert these carbon chains back into smaller chains. So essentially what we do is we have industrial strength pressure cookers at various pressures and temperatures that reduce the carbon chains of the compounds, right? Because everything at the end of the day, pretty much everything is carbon chains, right? Sugar is
Yeah,
C6.
so everything in like an animal, a human is just a different chain of like the bone is a different chain of carbon than the skin, which is a different chain of carbon than the muscle. Like, you know what I mean? So you're
Exactly,
breaking
with
all
different
these
compounds
complicated
added.
things. So when this all gets broken down, like what is the end product? Like what does it look like? What is it made? Like what is it? Is it all chemically the same carbon chain, just a simpler version? Like what does it look like? I don't, is it coal? Like I don't know what I can visualize here.
Oh, for sure. And I can definitely explain it pretty clearly. So we actually create four main products. So we create a regenerative fuel oil, which is essentially a crude oil. It's a light and sweet crude, which means it's not your traditional crude that you think, that really heavy, thick, black oil that you see
So
coming out.
what would this type of oil be used for? Like what use could you get out of that?
So you can fire it in a boiler all day long, or you can refine it like a traditional crude oil where you get your gasoline, kerosene, diesel, liquid petroleum gas, all the different cuts. I've even taken our kerosene and converted it into jet fuel before. So it is a straight chain hydrocarbon, chemically identical to what you drill out of the ground, except there's none of the harmful compounds in our fuel that are in traditional fuels because of how we use water. So because we use water, we're able to break down the heavy metals. We're able to break down all the what they call polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. Those are like the benzene, the really carcinogenic compounds found in hydrocarbon fuels. We're able to remove the dioxins. We can even, because of the water, we can even take glyphosate and we can break down glyphosate into its chemical components. So you have your fuel oil. You also create a natural gas. And our fuel oil, when we had it last tested versus traditional natural gas, our liquid fuel burns cleaner than traditional natural gas. So our natural gas is the cleanest burning hydrocarbon that you will find tested ever, period. We also create a biochar, which is essentially a man-made coal. But again, it's got no heavy metals in it, no sulfur compounds, no mercury compounds, none of those bad actors. You could use that as a fertilizer, or you actually can fire it in a kiln for power. And then we take the leftover water, which is filled with all nitrogen, phosphorus, manganese, potassium, all the good micronutrients, and we concentrate that down and we make a liquid fertilizer. And then the only thing you have left is the gray water, which can be used for irrigation. You can upgrade it into drinking water and several other applications, including land application for irrigation. So it's a complete recycling process. And it's able to take all the harmful compounds, break them down to the point where they're actually safe.
Is this only used like in like just pure like animal products, or can it be used with like metals, plastics, like basically like if you went to a dump, can you just start picking all this stuff? And it sounds like it's just more of an organic thing, like something that came from some kind of living
Well,
creature.
plastics are technically organic when you think about them from a carbon point of view, right? So it's anything carbon-based. So we can't do metal, we can't do rocks, and we can't do glass. But plastics, rubber, heavy oils, hydrocarbons, medical waste, anything of that nature can be processed through our system all at the same time. So you can even take the food waste, mix it with plastics, and still the fertilizers that come off will still be fertilizers. You won't have any harmful compounds in your
It's
fertilizer.
it seems like you guys should be like with every municipality in America or wherever, the whole world, and just be like, hey, all the things that fit this category, run it through our system, because then it can totally be reused and used away versus just buried in the ground, filling up landfills. Now, I guess the problem with this is the logistics of it is the separation, right? So I take out my trash, I throw all this crap into a bin. I don't care because I'm just getting rid of this stuff in my house. Somebody somehow, there's got to be a way. Like I know with metals, you can do ferrous metals, you can use a magnet and get that out, but there's a lot of like processing. I guess is that the biggest holdup from you guys doing
Right
that?
now, the biggest holdup is those two socioeconomic hurdles that I told you about. And it's obviously these systems aren't cheap, right? Our cheapest system processes 1 ton a day, and that's got a price tag right now of $1.5 million. So that's the other big hurdle. But we've already been in contact with several large municipalities here stateside who are itching at the itching to get our systems on site because they know what they can do. We have over a 90% energy efficiency, which is really unheard of in waste to energy. Things like pyrolysis are about 20 to 30% energy efficient, but it's because we use water and we're able to recycle all those loops to capture all the waste energy that typically would be dissipated. We recapture it and reuse it as energy. So
Yeah,
what we're
your only energy expenditure, I guess, would be electrical power to generate to run the machines, right?
Exactly. And once we're up and running, if you're depending, it's feedstock dependent. If you're using a high yielding feedstock, like used oils, like used cooking oil or used motor oil, if you're using rubber, things that will deliver a high yield as far as fuel oil and fuel gas, your thermal load is only going to be about 20 to 50% of the natural gas produced. So all the energy that'll be left over from the remainder of the natural gas and the fuel oil is all excess. We only need about 7% on certain feedstocks to completely power this system. 7% of the energy.
So it's not run by electrical power. It's run by like fossil fuel power as it's creating it.
We recycle some of our own energy, but the main power that really runs this thing are steam boilers. We use steam as for our heat. And it's really, we don't use band heaters. We don't really mess with a lot of that. It's mainly just steam. And we use superheated steam for our high temperature areas. But we're subcritical temperature and pressure across the spectrum. So we don't have to go to some of these crazy high temperatures like pyrolysis or gasification or even incineration for that matter, because the way our process works, where we use water. There's no other technology out there that actually uses water in most technologies that converts waste into energy. Water is the enemy because In a lot of situations, it's corrosive, but if you're using it intentionally, you know how to avoid that.
Right, and well, yeah, the water would be corrosive for like metal pipes and stuff, but you could just use like PVC or something, I assume, and then avoid that issue.
Yeah, we use high pressure stainless for pretty much everything across the board.
Okay.
Yep. That
What
that's why these things cost a
so
pretty penny.
what year did you guys like did your dad first create it, and like, 'cause this, I never heard of this before, but it sounds like it's been around for a while.
Sure, and if people are interested in looking into some of the history, the technology has its roots back to 97, but our original company's name was Changing World Technologies. My father was on the cover of Discover Magazine 4 times, in Scientific American, on History Channel, and Discovery Channel. So if you search his name, he's Brian Appel. If you search his name, he's in a lot of places. They had about 55 global patents, and just different things across the board. But when you run into socioeconomic issues that destroy your company's bottom line,
What, so what two issues were those? You didn't specify.
so 2008 we went public, and our IPO released the day before the market crash. So the market crash
That
plummeted.
was the housing crisis thing back in
Correct.
2008,
Yeah,
right?
that was the big housing bubble. And the company had to, unfortunately, as a result, file for bankruptcy. We restructured, we reorganized, and came out of it, but it was just too much damage done. We ended up partnering with a Turkish company that we ended up taking the technology and everything over there and to develop it further. That's why I lived in Istanbul for 5 years. But in July 15, 2016, there was a failed coup, and the country had completely.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
Oh,
Failed
a coup
coup.
d'etat is when the military tries to take over the government. They tried to actually assassinate the president, but it was a failed coup, so they actually didn't succeed. And then the president retaliated, and the country has completely suffered as a result. It's actually the second worst inflation in the world, only behind Venezuela. When I was there, it was about 2 to 2.5 lira to the dollar. Right now, my wife is Turkish. I ended up marrying a Turkish woman. Actually, she just got her citizenship, so she's technically American, but she has Turkish origins. I still have family there, and it's 35 lira to the dollar today. So in about 8 years, it went from 2 lira to the dollar to 35 lira to the dollar, and that just wreaks havoc on a country's economy and social
Oh,
standards.
for sure, because it takes so long for wages and everything else to catch up. I mean, look at what happened here in the last 2 years with inflation. It's like people, they get paid, does go up, but it's such a lagging indicator that it just screws everything up for a while. And this inflation is 10 times worse than what we've got going on in the States right now or over the
Oh,
past 2 years.
yeah, I've seen reports unofficial inflation was like 130%.
Yeah, like you could buy a gallon of milk today for $2, and all of a sudden tomorrow it's like six. It's like
Yeah,
in
yep.
one day it threw triple in price.
Yeah, it was really tough over there. So I
Well,
came
cool.
back, and that's
So
when I did a few other things.
cool. Let's get towards wrapping up. But I guess what's the future hold? And what again was your business name? Was Eden something?
We're Eden Energy Solutions.
Eden Energy Solutions. Okay, and then what's next for you guys?
So right now we're scaling out our manufacturing facility. We're based out of Austin, so we're building about a 20,000 square foot facility here now. And we're going to be building these, what we call our Trinity systems. So these are modular containerized units that'll process anywhere from 10 to 30 tons a day. We've got several interested parties looking to buy the first couple units off the line.
And who would your customer be for these smaller systems?
So right now we're looking at really any business that is producing significant volumes of waste. So we're looking at one slaughterhouse. We're looking at one of these very large hazardous waste haulers, and a couple of different airports we're talking to. We also have what we call our Genesis systems, which are our massive, large-scale, basically biorefineries that will process anywhere from 100 to 5,000 tons a day. And we're in talks with two African nations now, and we're going to be visiting them over the next 2 or 3 months. We actually have one of the delegates coming over here early next month, and we had a previous one here last week. So we're going to be making trips over there to see their partner with them and begin the global push
Yeah,
to
so
start
is
creating
the
systems.
is the airport, because of all the, like, the restaurants and stuff in there, all the leftover food stuff?
Oh, yes and no. So you have all the leftover waste that the airport generates itself, but the issue is the any international flight that's coming over, all the waste that is accumulated on the plane and the laboratories, the food and everything, it has to be disposed of under hazardous waste protocols because there could be seeds and different contaminants from other countries that they don't want to introduce.
Wow,
Our technology.
that's crazy. Like, I had no idea that was a rule. Like,
Yep.
that's mind-boggling to me.
So we destroy all pathogens and viral bacteria. So our technology is perfect for dealing with hazardous waste. So airports are extremely interested in what we have because that's a huge cost in their bottom line is getting rid of that waste.
Yeah, and I'm imagining the easiest way to sell this is just say, is just show a payback, right? It's like, this is going to save the money, and it's not going to, the payback's not that long. It's like, hey, let's just, it makes sense to do it. I just
Yep.
imagine
Right
with anything like
now
an
we're
airport,
talking.
because
Yep. Go ahead. Next.
airports are generally run by the government, aren't they? So that's the biggest hurdle, is the government moves at a snail's pace to do anything,
Sure.
even if it makes complete sense to do it.
100%. Yeah, dealing with governments is always slow, but at the end of the day, they're the ones that buy the bigger units, so it does make sense. But speaking of the ROI, we're talking with one of these hazardous waste haulers, and he's looking at a unit that's well over $10 million, and based on his fees that he collects from the people that he gets the waste from, that they pay him to take the waste, his payback on a $12.5 million unit is less than 10 months.
Oh,
So
wow, that's nothing. Yeah,
yeah,
that's absolutely. You
depending
would
on
be,
where these systems are, they can be extremely profitable.
Very cool. Well, wish you guys the best of luck. I think you're gonna kill it, because the world needs this. With all the waste that we have, we need to recycle more. So last two questions. What's your number one tip? So obviously you're an entrepreneur, helping with your dad, starting this business. What's number one tip for people out there?
So my number one tip for anybody who's looking to do something on their own is you just can't give up. When the chips have you down, when you feel like you can't go on, if you truly believe in what you're doing, you just got to look deep into your heart and understand that if you push forward, if you push through and you break through those walls and barriers, there's nothing that can stop you. As long as you believe in yourself, you believe in the product that you're at hand, you can really do it. It's getting through that belief that I can do it is has been one of the number one things that I believe has helped me get through all the hard times that we've been through on getting this technology to the world. I mean, we know we have something truly special the world needs. So I know I can't give up because the world needs this. So
Yeah.
just
And
never give up on what you believe in.
I agree with that, with one I guess clarification. I would say just be willing to pivot. Don't be so locked into one exact method of doing it, right? Like, you guys pivoted, obviously created these smaller units, but you started to do something bigger because you realized that was more of what the market needed, but you're still working for the same end goal.
100%. Yes, you have to be willing to adapt, right? You
Yeah.
keep pushing forward, keep believing in yourself, but always be willing to adapt to changing environments because if you don't adapt, you'll never succeed.
Yep. And then the last thing is, if people want to contact you or your company, Eden Energy, what's the best way?
Sure. I mean, we have a contact on our website, edenenergy.co. We unfortunately couldn't get .com. That already was snatched up. But EdenEnergy.co, you can follow us at Eden Energy Solutions on Instagram and at Eden Energy X on Twitter. That's really where we're the most active. Our marketing team has really done a great job of sharing who we are and what we do. So that's really the best way to reach out. My personal Instagram is Jonathan Appel 13. So I can also be found there.
Awesome. Well, Jonathan, thanks so much. Really insightful stuff, and we'll catch everyone next time on the podcast.
All right. Well, thank you, Scott.